Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As election season heats up in the first day with Tuesday's primary day, one thing we often hear about during the campaign is the middle class. How can candidates appeal to the middle class? Does their tax plan help a struggling or shrinking middle class? And what can be done to help middle class families afford college or retirement? What you don't often hear is exactly who is the middle class and what it means to be middle class. Well, this week we're joined by someone who's put a little bit more thought into that than the average person. Dr. Martin Nunley is an associate professor of marketing at Delaware State University and author of a new book, When Did We All Become Middle Class?, which examines class identity. Dr. Nunley, thanks for being with us on The Green this week.
Well, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
First off, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about why you wrote the book. It's not perhaps squarely in your area of expertise. What drew you to write about this topic?
Basically, I've been interested in class for a long time. When I was a teenager, I wanted to know where I fit in the world. And so I started reading books that I don't think most teenagers were reading at the time. I read first, I read things like, believe it or not, I did read Karl Marx's Manifesto. And then I went and read some other books, Who Rules America, and an assorted number of books. So that got me interested in social class. And at one time, I toyed with being a sociologist, but things changed for me. And so it kind of receded in the background. But, I've always read articles about it and was intrigued. Later on, when I was in my PhD program, marketers, we do talk about social class.
Sure.
We use it to segment populations. And so one of my fellow PhD students was doing his dissertation on marketing and social class. And so then that got me more interested in it. And I did a little bit of research at the time. But my area was totally different. I'm a supply chain guy. And so I'm a numbers guy looking at how to distribute products. So it's not directly related. After I had received my tenure and I had a little bit more freedom, I decided to delve into this a little bit more. And so basically, I thought about just writing articles or things like that.
Sure.
And then I started doing more research, and then it led to a book. And what was the last thing that prompted me to say I have to write this book was the growth in inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And class is very much related to what's going on with inequality.
I was going to say, when you look at this book, there's a lot of a discussion not about defining middle class economically, but rather socially, which I'm curious, how you pivoted to that view of middle class and what you found as you examined it from more of a social standpoint than rather an economic standpoint.
Actually, I tend to look at both aspects.
Okay.
And I look at the economic portion, and I also look at the social portion, because we can't really separate the two. See, the thing about it is class in itself is more about power and control, how much you can exert over your environment. And so there's two aspects to it. There's the economic aspect, and then there's also the social aspect. And when we talk about the social aspect, we can talk about things like social capital, prestige, esteem, because then if you have a level of prestige and esteem, people will tend to be more influenced by you. But you have to also admit that, your financial well-being can also influence people. I mean, obviously, if you have a great deal of money, you can exert more power through various means than someone who doesn't. But you have to look at the combination of the two. And so that is what really started me thinking about this. And that's why in the book I talk about things like, how can you exert this power, and what social class really means in terms of what is going on?
Is there a sense from what you've looked at that people view the middle class and I guess where they stand, maybe within the middle class or not, differently than where they actually stand in that social structure.
Yes. And you know, it's a difficult concept for a lot of people because we've changed how we view class over the years. Mm-hmm. I know in the book I go over the history of social class, yes. And I talk about how the middle class was at one time what we would consider the wealthy, okay, the bourgeoisie. If you look at it, that's who the middle class were. You had peasants, you had this wealthy group of individual, and you had the nobility.
Right.
And so then we broadened it a little bit more to because the wealthy had now become the upper class. And so now we were talking about people who owned their own businesses, people in professions, but they still were much they still had a lot more economic power than most other people. And so we had that consistent definition up until about the 1940s, which is surprisingly that it was that recent that mm-hmm. we changed our concept. Because if you look at movies and books from the 1800s all the way through the 1930s, the middle class were people who had servants. They lived in fairly large homes. They were in respected professions. And so people clearly identified them as the people in the top 10 or 20%. In the 1940s, that all changed. We started hearing more people claim that they were middle class. Now, some of it was due to what I call survey anomalies. I mean, if you're given a choice that says I'm lower class, middle class, or am I upper class, most of us are going to pick middle class. I mean, who wants to say that I'm in the lower class when you have some means and you have your own home and you can take care of yourself? And so what we've done is we've kind of gotten away from the term working class. Mm-hmm. And so but it's still interesting. A lot of people now are shifting more toward the working class definition. And so we're seeing when surveys mention, you know, lower class, working class, middle class, and upper class, we're seeing more and more people shift to that. Hmm. And I think that is primarily due to, you know, at one time, again, going back to the period right after World War II, the people who were middle class weren't that much different as far as income levels than the people who were working class. And so now we're beginning to see the separation of what formerly was the middle class and the working class. And so it's not so much that we're losing middle class. I know a lot of papers and articles right. have been saying, oh, we're losing the middle class. It's more like we've actually seen separation again.
And almost like a redefinition again.
Yes, yes.
What's the impact on the political power structure when you talk about middle class, especially in an election year like this? I mean, how do people's view of where they are in that social structure affect how they act in terms of voting and other political type of activity?
It's interesting because class is, while it's very important, there's other elements that that contribute to people's thoughts. But what we're seeing with this class dynamic is a couple of things. Right now, we have basically two presidential candidates. Okay, I mean there are some alternative choices, but we have basically Trump and Clinton. And so what we're seeing is and these are our dominant political candidates. But why are so many people who would classify themselves as either middle class or working class drawn to Trump when most of his life he hasn't been concerned with issues that would be important to them? What we're seeing is something that's been going on for quite a long time. People have a tendency to want to have leaders who they think are people who will work hard, who have some success, mm-hmm. okay? Because people want to be associated with success. And so Trump does have a level of success. And so he's drawing these voters who are tired of the status quo. But I don't think that Trump or people similar to him are going to change the status quo because they benefit from the status quo. Part of this is due to our conceptions and part of okay, how we view success, okay? We think that if someone is successful, obviously they deserve to be there because Americans, we truly do believe that if you work hard, you can achieve your dreams, okay? And so it must be that I'm not working hard enough or I'm not talented enough why I'm successful. But in Trump's case, let's be real. He started off with a silver spoon in his mouth. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, not everyone's father can back your loan if you're going to build a piece of real estate in Manhattan and lend you the money so you can put down the down payment for the loan. And so he had a tremendous advantage to start with. And so, you know, he did not build an empire from scratch. He did not rise from poverty to wealth.
The old pull up your bootstraps dynamic.
Yes, that is just not there. But that's how people see him. Mm-hmm. This image it draws people to this. And so they want to say, I can go to the next class level. I can be successful. I can raise myself up by my bootstraps because there's this businessman who's you know, increased wealth financially, you know, fabulously, you know, one of his own words. You know, it's been fabulous and marvelous how everything is. And so people are saying, look, I'd like to do that myself. But let's get real, okay? We like to think that we live in a meritocracy. And to some degree, you can move up in class. But recent evidence has shown that unfortunately, we have one of the lowest, and when we look at advanced developed nations, one of the lowest levels of class mobility. And so with that, we want to see a change because we're worried about not being middle class anymore. You know, it's kind of interesting. When we look at the traditional definitions of class, we talk about the lower class being the bottom one-fifth and the upper class being the top one-fifth and the middle being the middle three-fifths, okay? And so if you look at that from an economic point of view and look at distributions of incomes, et cetera, you're talking about people from $25,000 a year to $100,000 a year are middle class. Well, I have this question to ask people, and I want you to think about this. Are the people who are in the top fifth really upper class? We're talking about two school teachers married to each other. Are they the upper class? You know, are we talking about an accountant married to a dental hygienist? Are they upper class? These are people who make more than $100,000. So our concept of class is kind of distorted. Mm-hmm. We have these images of who middle class is and who they, you know, who, and that's what we are part of. But then we find out, wait a second, you know, I'm not quite making the same money as two teachers, maybe. Okay. But I know that these people are not upper class either.
Because they have the same issues. They're facing the same dynamics generally in their life that you are.
Right, right, right. The only thing is when I talk about this, I want people to understand that, you know, we have to have a consistent understanding of what class is and what these different levels are. And so I try to develop a framework to define class more precisely. Because just using the middle three-fifths is a lousy way to define anything. Because think about it. If all of a sudden the middle three-fifths now ranges from 15,000 to 40,000, is that still middle class? But that's the definition that we gave.
Right.
And so it makes no sense. So what we should be looking at is a standard of living. Okay. What is my standard of living? And the standard of living needs to be based on, you know, how much control can I have in my environment? And one of the main ways we can control our environment is to have enough wealth where we're self-sustaining. When I say self-sustaining, I'm not saying that you have to have so much wealth that you can live in the lap of luxury self-sustaining, but can you pay your bills and feed yourself and not have to worry about working? When we take that approach, that should be where our definition of middle class is. I earn enough income to so that I can save enough so I can be self-sustaining. Now, a lot of us don't make that choice. A lot of us say, ooh, I think I'd like to buy a BMW. Ooh, I'd like to do this. So, you know, but we excuse ourselves. But that's something that we've done to ourselves. So if you're not earning enough money so you could live the American dream and put away enough money to where you're self-sustaining in a reasonable amount of time, then I'm sad to tell you, you're not middle class. Okay, so accept that. And it shouldn't be seen as something that's derogatory. Okay, I know I was talking to someone that works in the office that I'm in, and what got me was when she said, "Well, I'm only working class." And I'm thinking, why was the only there? Right. You know, it's like you're ashamed that you're not middle class. You know, and I'm wondering about that. I'm saying, well, you shouldn't be ashamed of this situation you're in. You should be proud of your situation. Maybe you do want to aspire to something higher, but it's nothing wrong with being a person who can pay their bills, who takes care of their children, who blends in with society, doesn't cause trouble, and tries to do things for other people. What's wrong with that?
Which I do want to wrap up with this, which is in your conclusion, you say being class aware, like you're talking about, doesn't necessarily mean class warfare, but it's the first step to advocating for a person's own interests. So is what you're saying is that people just need to be more realistic about how they view themselves, and that will allow them maybe then to better affect their day-to-day life and their circumstances and maybe make the choices they need to make to have the kind of life that they want to have.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that we have to be aware of what goes on. I mean, I am a marketing professor, and I know the games that we play in marketing. And that's to get people to buy more stuff. And if you keep buying more stuff, you spend your money, you get into debt, and then you can't amass wealth that will allow you to have some breathing room if things happen to you. Okay, and so we have that. But not only is the marketing game played to get you to buy products, it's to get you to choose candidates. Because, you know, it's not that I'm saying that there's a class warfare going on, but if one group, the extremely wealthy, are advocating for their self-interest, and there's another group who are the normal working people, don't advocate for theirs. As a matter of fact, they get convinced to advocate for the extremely wealthy self-interest, then we're not playing in a game that we should be playing. And it's just phenomenal to me. I just read an article in the New York Times about the brothers who support Americans for Prosperity. We all know who these brothers are.
The Koch brothers. Yeah.
Okay, the Koch brothers. And so right now they have a camp for creating a groundswell of people to come up and advocate for this grassroots organization that supports things that benefit only the 1%. So They're holding these conferences, they're holding these things, they're holding these events so that we can get people who are working class to now start advocating for issues that concern the 1%. I mean, lower capital gains tax. How does that benefit anyone but the people who are at the top end of the income spectrum? We see these types of things going on. And so you have to understand, you're being marketed to, okay? Just like people selling you a product, they're selling you an idea, okay? And so you need to be more self-aware of where you are positioned and what's going to help you, okay? And so that's what I want people to be aware of. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. I'm hoping that some people will read the book and think about, you know, what's going on and how it's impacting them.
It's a fascinating book and a fascinating topic. Dr. Martin Nunley, Associate Professor of Marketing at Delaware State University, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
And again, the book is When Did We All Become Middle Class? Where can people get that?
Well, right now you can buy it online at Amazon, and it's published through Routledge.
So check it out on Amazon.com. Again, Professor Nunley, we appreciate the time.
Thank you.
And stay with us. The Green continues with our latest arts playlist and the story of a Wilmington artist who creates coloring books with a Black Lives Matter theme. You're listening to Delaware Public Media.